Okay, so just to speak about the Megillah for a few minutes, as we go into it now in about, not so much, 15 minutes or so is Maariv. So one of the fascinating things about the Megillah is not just sort of the internal story, which we know pretty well, but is that the Megillah, in many ways, is in conversation with two other stories in Tanakh. Specifically, the story of Megillat Esther is a discussion, is a rumination on how Jews deal with being in power in a foreign government. Right, that is essentially the challenge that Esther and Mordechai are dealing with. And the two other stories that that have the same sort of theme or the same setting are one from a very similar time period, only slightly earlier, which is the book of Daniel, in which you have Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the Golei Yehuda, four of the people who were exiled after the rebellion of Jehoiakim, and were brought to the court of Nebuchadnezzar to be trained in the ways of the Malchus, presumably to be brought up as good Persians and then sent back as intermediaries between the Jews, and the Babylonians. Between the Jews and the Babylonians, this was sort of standard procedure in the ancient world, that you would invite sort of the royalty, the nobility of conquered nations to become members of the royal court. This way they would identify with the conquering power and then you would send them back. And the third story, which is the first one in Tanakh chronologically, is the story of Yosef. And when you think about those three stories and you ask the question, what is the way in which a Jew should act if he finds himself in power in a foreign government? When you're just reading the pshat, you get very different answers from the story. Right? If you read the pshat of Esther, right, how does a Jew get by in Galut? What? Yeah, exactly. Right? You don't tell anybody you're Jewish. Right, Esther doesn't tell anybody who she is. It's only at the last moment where she has to sort of pop this in Achashverosh and say, by the way, you know that decree that you barely know happened? Well, it was against my people, which you didn't know, because I never told you who I was. And Mordechai, no one quite knows. Mordechai, yes, he's known as Mordechai Yehudi, but in what is perhaps the most ironic moment in the Megillah, right, we all say it, there was a Jew in Shushan, and what was his name? Mordechai. What does Mordechai mean? It's from Marduk, right? From the god, right? There was a Jew, and the person who is identified as a Jew, his name is the name of a pagan god. So even Esther doesn't tell anybody who she is, and even Mordechai, who does let it known that he's a Jew, at least from the outside, is about as acculturated as you could possibly be, to the point where his name is Marduk, right? Is the name, and the truth is, so is Esther's name. Right, because Esther's Jewish name is Hadassah, but her name in the Megillah, Esther, is Ishtar. Right, so you have this ironic moment. Right, Ishtar is also a god of the Persians. So if you read the pshat of Esther, it seems to be that the way you get along in Galut is by blending in, right, not standing out as a Jew. On the other hand, if you look at the other two stories, the story of Daniel and the story of Yosef, right, how does one get along in Galut? So Daniel, right, is also given a foreign name. He's given a Babylonian name. He's given the name of Belteshazzar. But you hear that his name is Belteshazzar once, and then for the rest of Sefer Daniel, he's known as Daniel. Right, and consistently throughout, Daniel stands up for being a Jew. In the first parak of Daniel, Daniel introduces, right, Daniel refuses to eat mipat bag ha-melech, from the food that the king wants to give him, which, while some of the mepharshim suggest, is not kosher food, the position of Chazal in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Vav is that in fact the food was kosher. But Daniel was the first one to decree that you aren't allowed to eat food which is produced by non-Jews simply because it's non-Jewish food. Right? And then Daniel, and consistently, whenever he confronts whatever king it is, he always stands up. He's never afraid of the king. He always criticizes the king, tells him that they're trying to be too arrogant against God, that God is going to punish them, and consistently is rewarded for this, at least for most of Sefer Daniel, until he gets thrown into a lion's den a little bit later on. But Daniel stands up for being a Jew. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah as well. Right? They say to Nebuchadnezzar, when he tries to get them to bow to his statue, that we won't. Not because we know we're going to be saved. We don't. God could save us. We don't know whether he will or won't, but we'll die anyways because we would never bow to you. We're going to worship God. And they get thrown into the fire. They end up surviving. And when they come out, Nebuchadnezzar is forced to say, he looks at the situation. What does he say? Wow, your God is amazing. And he makes a decree that anybody in the kingdom who speaks badly about God will be torn to pieces. So the story of Daniel, which is basically contemporaneous, but slightly before, the story of Esther has this totally different model. Yosef as well is consistently known as a Jew. He's called out as a Jew. That's how he talks about himself as a Jew. When he rises to power, it's still, that's a bit less clear, right? Because he takes on the name Tzafnapaneach, and he's clearly somewhat blended in because his brothers don't know that he's Jewish. They don't recognize that. So you have three stories. You have in Pshat, Esther, where the message is blend in. Daniel, where the story is stand up for what you believe in at all costs. And Yosef, where at the beginning of his journey, he stands up, he's very clear who he is, and later on in the story, as he reaches the halls of power, at least in Pshat, right, he blends in to the society. And these three stories and their different models were in front of Chazal when they were struggling with the question, how do we deal? Right? Chazal, just like us, we're still writing in, at least living in Canada, we're studying with the question, how do you act politically when you are in Galut? And you know, there are many famous midrashim in Esther. Now, sometimes midrash is trying to tell you pshat. Sometimes it's trying to give you a lesson. But imagine, here's a perspective on many of those midrashim. If you have the book of Esther, which tells you that the way to survive in Galut is by putting your head down, and that may have been true in the time of Esther, but if Chazal think it's not the right approach for their time, what are they going to do? The midrash is going to read Daniel into Esther. Right? It's going to tell you that you think that Esther was hiding her Jewishness, but she wasn't, she was standing up. And you'll see that the Midrashim of Chazal throughout Megillat Esther are doing just that. So when Chazal say, or according to the Pshat of Esther, what did Esther probably eat when she was in the king's palace? Whatever he gave her, right? Meaning, no one knew she was Jewish. Why would they assume to give her different food? But the Midrash says, no, she only ate nuts. Where do they get that from? They get that from the first parak of Daniel, which is where Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, right? That's what they eat. What Chazal are saying is that you think that this is a model, but either that's just the simple level of the Megillah, but really Esther was standing up, you just don't see it. Or alternatively, even if that was good for Esther, as a model for most of Galut, Daniel is the model they want to take, not the Pshat of Esther. And therefore, Chazal read the Midrashim of Daniel into Esther. And the truth is that they do the exact same thing, not only in Esther, but they do it in Yosef. Because Yosef, as we mentioned, is also a bit ambiguous. He's less frontal than Daniel. And the Midrashim consistently read Daniel into the Yosef story as well. So for example, the first thing that Daniel does, that happens when Daniel enters the royal court of the Babylonians, is he's taught Lashon Kazdim, he's taught to speak in the royal court. And according to the Midrash, the first thing that Yosef needs to do when he meets Paro is that Paro tests him in every language to see what he can speak. Right? That notion that he needs to be trained in the language so that he can be a member of the upper echelons is from Daniel. What Chazal are doing, right, and the Midrashim here are fascinating, what they're really doing is they're forcing you to ask the question, don't just think about these three stories, Esther, Daniel, and Yosef, as stories that happened. They're different models that Tanakh is telling you of how different people at different times exist in Galut. And when Chazal midrashically read Daniel into multiple stories. What they're telling you is that if you want to last long-term in Galut, the simple pshat of Esther, putting your head down, at least till the end, when everyone sort of comes to the fore as Jewish, or Yosef, who's ambiguous, is not going to work in the long term. It may have been good then, but by the Midrashim, bringing in the story of Daniel, they're either telling you that actually, historically, the Esther and Yosef story are not as simple as they seem at first glance, or they're telling you, even if that's good for them, if you want to know what Esther would look like, if you want to use it as a model, here's the Midrash, right? It's take Daniel. And therefore, when you're reading Esther and you're thinking about the Midrashic messages, you're not only supposed to be thinking about the Ashgacha Pratis, about how God's hand was there, you're also supposed to be looking for models of how do we, while we're still not living in Eretz Israel, we're still in amongst foreign powers, how do we express our Jewishness and Chazal's message that they're trying to get across in their consistent Midrashim along Esther is that the model of Daniel, of standing up and being the Yehudi, loudly being the Yehudi, is the model that will keep us going through Galut. And that's sort of another layer of meaning that you're supposed to be looking for as we read through the Megillah right after we finish. Maariv, on that note, Rabbi Chananel.